Go behind the wheel, under the hood, and beyond with Car Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Welcome to Car Stuff. I'm Scott Benjamin.
And I'm Ben Bolin.
And today we have got a topic that's kind of been hanging around on our list for a while that we've wanted to get to, but we just haven't gotten to it until today. But I'm excited about talking about it now, as I think there's a lot of ground to cover here.
Yeah, and we finally tracked down the right time to do it.
Very, very good, Ben. We're going to talk about what?
We're going to talk about tracking and recovery systems for your vehicle.
Yeah, and the pros, the cons, kind of the different systems available, whether they're expensive, they're inexpensive, some of the in-betweens, some of the things they're good for, some common sense tips.
Yeah.
Vehicle theft numbers. I want to talk about some 2012 statistics that have come out from the FBI that I'd like to talk about. And I think that's something that our listeners will be interested in because there's some switches in trends that have been happening over the last 8 years that, 2012 has proven to be kind of an unusual year in car theft.
Yeah, it might surprise a lot of people. Now, as we go through this, of course, you know, at this point, Scott, you and I always have a couple of other podcasts that we can reference to in our back catalog.
Always.
So we have some good stuff about car thefts, especially about chop shops that you can check out if you want more statistics. But we do have some numbers that come to bear here. So let's just start at the beginning. The truth of the matter is, as we know, cars get stolen, I don't want to say all the time.
How about every 44 seconds?
That's about right.
that's an amazing statistic that came out of something. I think it was like in 2011. I think this FBI stat came out that something like every 44 seconds, a vehicle is reported stolen.
In the United States alone.
Just in the United States. That's just in the United States. So a huge number of cars are stolen. And, I mean, it amounts to like, it's over 700,000 cars that are stolen yearly, which is a huge number, but it's not the top number. And we'll tell you the top number later when we get to the 2012 statistics. But it's something that the amount equals something like $4.3 billion in property theft. I guess the total amount of vehicles that are stolen in the year amount to $4.3 billion.
Yeah, and one of the best ways, or one of the most recently popular ways to recover a stolen vehicle nowadays for drivers has been the GPS system or global positioning systems that are used to... Is it redundant to say GPS system?
It is.
It's like saying ATM machine.
It is. It's okay. We'll let it slide, Ben.
All right. Just this once. A global positioning system used to track your car can make the difference between having it reappear a few days later and never seeing it again.
Exactly. And some of them don't use GPS. Some of them use cellular technology. Mm-hmm. Some use radio signals, and there's other devices as well. But, we mentioned that some are affordable, some are expensive. Now, the GPS and cellular technology that you talked about, those are good after your vehicle's been stolen. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're able to track the device or the vehicle later, which doesn't surprise anybody, I'm sure. Same thing with the radio signal, you know, like the homing device systems, which we'll talk about. Those are good after your car is stolen, but there's a couple of things you can do ahead of time, Ben, in order to prevent your car from being stolen. I want to talk about those as well. I don't know if this is a good fit for it right now, or do you want to hang on to that for a moment?
Let's go into it right now. Let's do it before the car is stolen.
All right. So, okay, we've got there's actually four different levels of protection that you've got as far as like protecting your vehicle, preventing the theft from ever happening. Mm-hmm. And immobilizers, which you would think would be number one, you know, something that is like a kill switch or something that prevents the car from even being stolen.
Yeah.
That's actually the third thing on the list. So there's prior to that you can do. Now, this information is coming from a division or a group, rather, that is called the National Insurance Crime Bureau, or NICB. And what that is it's a North American nonprofit membership organization in Illinois. It was created by the insurance industry, and they work with law enforcement agencies, and they address insurance-related crime and issues like that. So this is a very focused group on theft and insurance fraud and property crimes, I guess. And of course, auto theft is a huge factor in what they do.
Right. And they have some great numbers for anyone interested in those databases, because essentially what they're doing is they're liaising between law enforcement and private insurance companies to compile the most accurate numbers they get. Why is that important? Well, it's important because, not to cast a dispersion on anybody, but Scott, there are some people who will call their insurance company to report something, but maybe not the cops.
Exactly. Yeah. So this is a great, I guess a great division. I don't know if I want to call it a division or just a group or
an organization.
Maybe that's the best way to say it, that kind of covers all the bases, and they've got kind of their eyes open for this type of thing to happen. Exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the, and you know what? The 2012 theft numbers that I'm going to give you later in the podcast.
Yeah.
Those are coming directly from the NICB. So, you know, that's a great source right there. Let's get back into the four layers of protection. The first one, you know, we mentioned immobilizers were later in the list, but mm-hmm. the first one is common sense. And obviously, well, not a lot of people have common sense when it comes to their car and car safety and preventing theft.
Isn't that weird that it's called common sense, but it's often rare? So common sense would just be the most basic stuff. Take whatever you were thinking was basic and make it more basic than that. People were talking about stuff like not leaving your car running with the windows down.
That's exactly what they say, Ben. They say lock your car and take your keys. It's the most simple advice you can possibly give somebody, but a lot of thefts occur when owners make it really, really simple for thieves to get in and take their car. Like, they just leave the keys, you know, laying on the passenger seat maybe.
Right. Like, I'm just going to go in and get my receipt for the gas, or I'm just going to run in for a moment. Oh, and this is a small town. Nothing ever goes wrong.
That happens all the time. In fact, we had a listener recently that sent in some photos of a car. That was an unusual car that was in the parking lot. And he mentioned, you know, by the way, you know, this is an interesting car, but by the way, the keys were in the ignition when I looked at it. It was, you know, parked at a Walmart somewhere or something like that. I forget where it was. Okay, number two, a warning device. And I'm talking about like a visible or an audible warning device that, you know, just kind of, you know, if you walk up to a vehicle, you approach a vehicle, and it says, you know, system activated, you know, whatever. There's those type of devices.
Step away from the car.
Exactly. That type of thing, Ben. So if there's that, or there's, you know, even just a flashing LED on the dash.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something that indicates that there's an alarm there, something that, you know, that says that this car is protected in some way. And that does a lot to deter theft. Now, the third one we mentioned, immobilizing devices, and that's, I guess that's a pretty simple, you know, idea that if your car can't be started, typically it can't be stolen, right?
Right. It bricks your car. You know, you hear sometimes that terminology used with video game devices or with a phone. Like, mm-hmm. I've bricked my phone because I tried to do some hacking stuff to it. So if someone tries to steal your car, an immobilization device will either not let it start, or in some cases, it can be remotely stopped.
Correct. Yeah. And you know what? We're talking really mostly about things like immobilizer keys and ignition systems that don't allow the vehicle to start unless the proper key is used, the one with the chip in it.
Right, the microchip. My car has one of those chip keys.
Exactly, mine does too, and it's an older car, but it still has one of those, you know, you have to have the proper key in order to start it. But we're also thinking about things like kill switches and fuel cutoff switches that people don't know about. You know, a lot of people used to install, you know, a toggle switch that would shut off the fuel pump. And that was a simple deterrent, or a kill switch. I know I had friends that had cars in high school that had kill switches where, you know, after a while you can tell where the kill switch is if it's in the bad spot. But,
right.
You know, it's a switch underneath the carpet that you would press with your heel. And that would, again, that would, same thing. It would, you know, allow the fuel pump to operate again. It's just an electrical on-off switch. And after a while, you know, that spot in the carpet becomes worn and you can spot where that is.
But, right, yeah.
But, you know, for a while, I guess that really works well. And if you didn't know that it was there, you probably wouldn't, you know, think to activate something like that if you're trying to steal a car.
And you're probably not going to have the time to look for it.
Exactly. And the fourth layer of protection, Ben, is finally we're getting to what we're talking about today. A tracking device. Now, this is what we'll cover in this whole podcast, but I wanted to point out that, you know, this NICB, this organization has said that, you know, up to the fourth point, we're not even talking about tracking devices.
Right.
Tracking devices are kind of the last line of defense, and that's after something's already gone wrong, after your car's already been stolen, that's when a tracking device comes into effect, and that's what we'll talk about now.
Yes. So, tracking device, as we're talking, is, really, I love that you say it's the last line of defense, because when a tracking device comes into play is post-crime or in the course of the crime. Where's my car? Call 911. Do you have a tracking device? Do you have a service perhaps like OnStar or BMW Assist or something? And what we'd like to do is talk about some of the pros and cons. As you mentioned, one of the biggest pro, the absolute biggest pro, is that you can know where your car is. Because while it is true that cars without tracking devices are rediscovered, every minute that passes after the car is MIA just drastically increases the chance that you will either never recover the car or you will not recover it in a drivable condition.
Yeah, the range or the zone that that vehicle could currently be in is constantly getting larger and larger and larger. Think about it as as almost like a map where, you know, you're at the center of the map and then that circle that goes around, you know, and it just kind of grows and grows and grows. Every minute it can be farther and farther away. Now it may stay in place. It may stay local.
Sure.
But you never know that really. And that's the maddening part about the whole thing. Ben, I'm going to take a little sidebar here. Have you ever had a car stolen?
I have never had a car stolen. Yet.
I also have never had a car stolen. I've had things, you know, smaller items like, you know, a bicycle and things like that. And I wish that I had something that I could track where it went. Or, you know, you have your suspicions, you know, the shady guy in the neighborhood that, you know, you don't quite trust, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I don't know. The tracking thing on cars, I've never really had anything additional other than, you know, mobilizing devices or just, you know, like, well, common sense, I guess, is one that I've used. And you know, the warning devices, sure, there's an LED on my car that flashes when the alarm is activated. Just a simple alarm. It's not a tracking aftermarket type device. But I've never really had any kind of need for one, I don't think. I mean, that's what you always think, though, until your car's stolen, right?
You know what my key is, right? I always drive an ugly car. And I try to park next to more attractive cars.
that's a pretty good tactic, Ben. You know, you're going to find out later, though, maybe that's not the best tactic because they're not always after the newest, shiniest, best cars, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, setting this one up.
I promise you, we'll get to that. But that's kind of a little interesting fact that's going to come out of the 2012 information.
Yes.
So let's get into the tracking devices. How about that?
Great. Okay. So if you, you know, odds are statistically, if you are listening to this podcast, you are already intimately acquainted with at least one tracking device, and that would be your smartphone.
That's right? True. Yeah.
So, for anyone who's ever had a cell phone of some sort stolen, it is possible to track that with apps like Mobile Me or something for Apple users. But the technology there is similar, at least for GPS devices. So, the way that these work often require a service fee.
Yeah. And sometimes that service fee can be pretty expensive. Now, a lot of them are built in. We'll talk about We'll talk about the affordable systems according to our article, because we have an article on HowStuffWorks.com that's called, Is a Tracking and Recovery System for Your Car Worth the Cost? Mm-hmm. And where we kind of decide whether or not the price point is worth it for your particular vehicle. Now, that's entirely up to you, really. I mean, you could put it on a $500 car if you wanted to. I don't know if you necessarily should or not. I mean, I guess it's kind of all in the eye of the beholder, whether it's worth it or not, right?
Yeah, that's a good point, Scott. There's also a bit of a cost of ownership calculation here that we can talk about. You know, in what ways does this reduce your cost or your risk? And how much would it cost over time?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we'll start with the affordable system.
Yeah,
so let's start with OnStar. And
okay.
OnStar is pre-installed in General Motors vehicles. Not every GM vehicle, but most GM vehicles.
Yeah,
at this
more than actually now it was in 2009 it was more than 30, but now it's the vast majority of the vehicles.
Yeah, it's
the new ones.
It's definitely gone up, and there's a good reason for that. I mean, it's being used more and more, and people really like the features and convenience and everything that goes along with it. And it's pre-installed, which is nice, so that, you know, everything is the fit and finish is really nice. You don't have to worry about an aftermarket system that comes in and, you know, kind of messes things up. Not that that's the case, as we'll talk about, but OnStar is about, I think it's $199 a year. And that's for the full service. That means that, you know, after you get it past your initial, you know, like, why don't you try this? Take the puppy home and see if you like it.
Yeah, your free trial month or whatever.
Exactly. Yeah, that kind of honeymoon period where you decide that you really like it. And then we're gonna hit you with a pretty sizable bill, $199 a year to have this going now. But there's a lot of good features that come along with this. Of course, you know, it uses GPS.
Sure.
And there's all the hands-free calling and emergency assistance.
They can remotely unlock your vehicle if you lock your keys in.
And they can remotely shut it down if someone has stolen it, which is a huge one, right?
Which is, we will find, one of the premium superpowers of these sorts of devices. Now, OnStar is a hybrid because it is both proprietary software and proprietary hardware. So it's, if we imagine that there were maybe several different types of GPS devices, then OnStar is a hardwired tracker because this this comes in the car. It uses the car's battery for power, which is important, right? An important differentiation, and it can do multiple tasks. This is as opposed to something like a data logging device, which would just be able to tell you in retrospect where your car has been.
So it would say, it would report what happened to your car rather than reporting in real time what is happening to your car.
Right. Yeah. And, an OnStar, of course, does log your data too for the paranoid among us.
Ah, Ben, you know what? You had to say it, right? Because there's been some discussion. You've got another podcast that you do.
Right. Yeah.
And there's a lot of discussion about the black box and what the black box contains and, mm-hmm. you know, how it's tracking you and recording everything you're doing, right?
Yeah.
This is fringing on that, right?
Right. Yeah. This is fringing on it. It is, however, for your security. And could I take a sidebar briefly?
Of course you can.
All right. Thanks, Scott. One thing that can be, I don't want to say irritating, but one thing that can give you and I a chuckle is if we receive emails about how insidious it is for there to be tracking devices on cars, right? I can't help but laugh a little bit when I receive an email about the worries about these tracking devices, right? Which are valid. I will say they are valid concerns. And then at the very bottom of the email, Scott, there's this little line after the signature that says sent from my iPhone.
Ah, yes, yes. So apparently tracking isn't all that much of a concern, really. They're not applying that to every aspect of their life, right?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a selective concern. That's the end of the sidebar. The truth of the matter is that, yeah, while there are privacy concerns, at this point, for these tracking and recovery systems, these are opt-in devices. Now, Scott, you and I have an entirely different episode just on the black box car debate. And one of the spoilers that you and I need to reiterate is that black boxes are already on most cars.
Well, sure they are. And they're used for, and I'll call it forensic data gathering, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. They're not used for Uncle Sam to figure out when you go to Publix or the AMP.
No, and I mean, could they be? Maybe. I don't know. But why would anybody really care? I mean, that's the thing that this comes down to is like, I don't know. I always think about this. Like, why would anybody really care if I'm headed to Kroger to buy some groceries and then to the gas station and then back home? Why would anybody really be concerned about watching me do just these mundane, ordinary things typically? I mean, I guess, you know, if there's some kind of suspicion that's roused for whatever reason, there are many other ways that are much better to track somebody, you know, attaching a GPS device to the car, you know,
sure.
that lays it right out on a map in front of them and, you know, all kinds of different better ways to do it. These black boxes that we're talking about, they record, you know, the last known data that the vehicle was producing prior to accidents.
Right.
It helps in investigations,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So this is much more, that kind of data being recorded is much more what we would call internal data. So what is the engine's operating temperature, for instance? What's on the odometer when the accident occurs? Stuff like that.
Yeah, whether you jammed on the brakes, you know, 1 second prior to it happening, or if you didn't touch the brakes at all.
Or if you were wearing a seatbelt. So watch out for that one.
Exactly. Yeah, there's all kinds of different stuff like that that, whether the airbag's deployed or, you know, whatever. There's a lot of different information that comes out of that.
And those are very different than what we're talking about now, at least at the current stage. And, you know, Scott, maybe in the future we can talk about that debate that popped up about using the next generation of black boxes to tax people by the mile.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's a proposal for that to happen, but
yeah, we'll
I don't
see.
Know if it'll come about.
But you know, this stuff is different.
Can I just say that, you know, OnStar and GM, they're not the only game in town. I mean, there's also BMW who's doing this.
Yes, yeah. BMW Assist is a similar service that offers a lot of the same abilities. You know, you can figure out where your car has been. You can also get it immobilized, I believe, if it's stolen.
Yeah, there's all kinds of different things that this will do. It's pretty much the same thing as OnStar, basically. I mean, there's going to be different little variances here and there, differences in the system.
It's still the same price.
It's the exact same price per year. It's $199 per year. And, this is something that's also pre-installed at the factory, so mm-hmm. you don't have to worry about, the placement of it or anything like that. And, integration into your system. And it's available on, I think it's 2007 and later BMW mm-hmm. models that are equipped with it. It's not every BMW model, I don't believe.
Right, not yet at least. And these aren't the only game in town. There are other manufacturers that provide pre-installs.
That's right.
But then there's also the idea of saying, hey, Scott and Ben, let's say I have a car that is older than these systems, from the 80s maybe. You've got a mid-80s vehicle, mm-hmm. and you still want it to have a tracking device. Then you can get a portable tracker, battery powered. When we say battery, in this case, we don't mean the car battery. Or you could get something that you plug in to your car. So you plug it into the OBD-II connector, and then you have the car battery itself powering it. You get an aftermarket device.
Sure, yeah. It plugs into that OBD-II connector at the bottom of the dash, right below the steering wheel. And it's kind of like, have you seen those tracking keys? Or not tracking keys, I'm going to say that. the insurance key. Maybe it is a tracking key.
Yeah. That insurance companies give you an option to use these devices for an opportunity for a lower premium.
Yeah.
And if you prove that you're a safe driver, then you get a couple bucks off.
So, again, that's monitoring what you're doing. We've talked about that system, too. And this is the same type of thing. I mean, I'm not sure if this one particularly, but there's a company called Zumbach that makes one that is just about $100, brand new. And you have that installed.
For the device.
Exactly. And there's a service fee of about $150. And so it's a little bit cheaper than the OnStar system or the BMW Assist system. But this Zumbach system is, it's an aftermarket thing. It's kind of, you can do this optional lifetime setup, where it's only $400, I guess, maybe. But, and that may be best for somebody who doesn't want to blow a whole lot of money on it, because the whole thing involved then would be $500 total.
Yeah.
And you'd be able to protect, let's say, a classic car or a car mm-hmm. that you just keep in the garage and drive on weekends, something like that.
And this also, we should mention, it doesn't come with all of the bells and whistles that BMW's Assist, OnStar, or similar programs would come with. You don't get the emergency assistance, for instance.
Yeah. Exactly, and the hands-free cellular calling and all that. None of that comes with it because, again, the OnStar system and the Assist system from BMW, those are integrated. They're all built into the car. Everything works seamlessly together. It's a little different when you're adding something into a system. They're great features to them, and they do the job well. It's just that, they're not quite as seamlessly integrated into everything the way the other ones are. And there's one other one that we want to mention here first before we get into kind of the expensive alternatives.
Yes.
There's one called the Car Shield. Mm-hmm. That sells for about $349, and that's $160 a year. So you can see that, it's still a pretty good investment, I guess. I mean, we're talking about the affordable systems right now. Now, those are.
Yeah, keep that in mind.
Yeah, I mean, it's all in how you look at it, though. I mean, you keep these yearly contracts up, and they get to be quite expensive as well. Now, I like that the Zumbach system, or Zumbach, sells for $100, and you can have this option for the $400 lifetime service, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, I think that would be worth it. Again, going back to the vehicle you have and the value that you personally assigned to that vehicle. Also, for instance, with Car Shield, you do get some more stuff than you would get with Zumbach. You get some of the services that these proprietary manufacturer direct companies will sell. So you would have, for instance, some of the concierge services of OnStar. Yes. That's what I would call them. But also, yeah, man, of course, $400, $550 for Zumbach total or whatever. It's a lot of money, but isn't it less than having to pay, $25,000 for a stolen car?
Sure, to replace your car. I mean, that's this cost benefit analysis thing you have to do in order to determine whether or not the system is worth it for you or is worth it for your particular vehicle.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these systems, like that Car Shield system, I think it even provides vehicle diagnostic information, so it provides some great information.
Mm-hmm.
You can get some great stuff out of it if you like to. If you really want to, fully, I'll say, exploit the system and use every feature and option that they have, you know, fantastic. It'll have a lot of really good stuff for you and stuff that, you know, you may not have really thought that you wanted, but, you know, it's kind of neat to be able to access some diagnostic information on a much older car, you know, that you thought, well, I had to, you think you would have to buy a brand new GM product or a BMW product to get that type of, or that level of service.
Yeah. And you can also use that, for instance, to tune your vehicle. That's a pretty cool thing to think about.
That is really a cool thing. Yeah. So, you know, we've gotten through kind of the affordable systems, and I do want to talk about the more expensive alternative, I guess. But first, Ben,
what better way to continue our conversation about some of the higher end detection and tracking devices?
Yeah.
The creme de la creme,
there,
if you will.
There is one that stands out, Ben, and it's, it made kind of the top on this list on our site, right?
Can I say it before we go any further? I remember watching these commercials and the idea of the technology, I'm going to date myself a little bit here, probably both of us, the idea of the technology was space age to me.
Definitely. It was like Jetsons technology, mm-hmm. right? Yeah, it was really cool. And do you want to tell us what the system is?
Sure. We are talking about LoJack.
Yeah, that's right. And it can be an expensive system. I mean, I guess we should just come right out with the cost, right?
Yeah.
It's, the system is $695. However, and this is the great part about this, really. $695, but there's no monthly fees at all. It's a one-time purchase price. And it sounds like I'm, you know, in a commercial for this thing, but I'm not. I'm just going to tell you some of the benefits and some of the, I don't know, is there a downside to this, maybe?
Well,
other than the cost, maybe.
Yeah, well, there is another downside, which we can get to later.
Okay.
But let's sing the praises.
Sure. So $695, which is quite a bit more than any of the other systems. Now, I don't know what an OnStar system would cost to add to a GM vehicle, but I would bet that it's somewhere, you know, it's probably even more than $695.
So. Right, because the OnStar hardware itself is bundled into the initial cost of the vehicle.
And not only that, you've got a nearly $200 monthly fee, which you don't have to pay for LoJack. So
right.
LoJack is kind of it's a good option for somebody that doesn't have another system that's already doing the same type of thing. Like if you already have, you know, OnStar, there's no need to add LoJack to it. You could, because it operates in a different manner.
That's true, and I'm really glad you said that. One of the reasons that LoJack is pricier is because it doesn't use the same technology. In fact, it uses technology that predates the kind of technology powering OnStar. LoJack operates by radio.
Yeah, radio signal versus GPS. So, you know, where the GM system, the OnStar system, and the BMW system, those are GPS-based systems. This uses a radio signal, and the benefit of that is that it works underground or in parking decks or anything like that, because a common tactic by thieves is to take the vehicle underground into a parking deck or, you know, below a bridge or something like that where the signal is blocked from reaching, you know, the satellite. And the signal is then shut off, and they're unable to track the car, unable to see where it went. They can guess where it went, you know, the last known location, I guess, where it was seen or spotted or detected. But you don't know for sure whether or not they've taken it under there, deactivated the system, and then driven it away.
Right.
So, you know, with the LoJack system, the radio signal continues to work even underground. So it's a very strong signal, and it's easy for law enforcement to track.
Right. And it's tied to the specific vehicle itself. So each LoJack system is linked to the VIN of the vehicle, and it's when the car is reported stolen, when the police are typing in the VIN number, it triggers the LoJack.
Exactly. So, you know, it's reported stolen. The state police crime computer system activates the LoJack system just simply by saying that it's a stolen vehicle, and it immediately fires up. And now you may think, well, you know, what's going to stop somebody from just, you know, cutting the wires and, you know, taking the unit out of the car? Well, they've really, really thought about this. Well, they hide the system. It's randomly hidden in one of 20 locations in the vehicle. They've got about 20 different spots on vehicles mm-hmm. that they typically like to put these things, and it could be in any one of those 20 spots.
Yeah, because it's not a big unit. And this is another startling thing about LoJack. They've got some great stats on their side. They have, for instance, around a 90% recovery rate.
Yeah, that's really, really good. I mean, other systems I don't think have anywhere near that. I mean, most vehicles, as a matter of fact, are returned within 24 hours if you use the LoJack system. Mm-hmm. That's according to, you know, what they say. They claim that. But, you know, that's cars, trucks, SUVs, classic cars, of course, construction equipment, you know, mm-hmm. fleet vehicles. I'm not so sure about motorcycles. I'm kind of questioning the low jack on a motorcycle. And I don't know if it's just because it's harder to hide the unit on a motorcycle or not. Because on a car, it's pretty easy. It's very tough to disable a low jack system on a car because of these random locations that they place the system. And people don't know what to look for.
Right.
You know, the thieves don't know what to look for. So, I don't know. It's a great return rate, a recovery rate on these things. 90%. That's fantastic.
Well, we also have to point out one thing about these kind of statistics. And that is, that many of the people who are boosting cars are amateurs and are on a joyride. So naturally the question for some of our listeners out there, you guys might think, oh, well, what about the car thieves who know what they're doing? Well, then yes, sure. It's actually, I'm certain that there are some thieves who know enough about the low jack system to find or disable it, but those are not the majority of car thieves.
And I'm picturing a thief running a wand over a car, almost like a TSA agent, you know, like with a metal detector or something.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
Yeah, it's almost like that, like a, you know, detecting device.
The radio signal?
Yeah, something like that, but I know it's not like that. But, you know, with LoJack, they've got this, LoJack has this great relationship with the law enforcement agencies, you know, like the state police, and of course they're in the computer, the crime computer system, so, you know, the system really pays for itself if the vehicle's stolen, of course. I mean, all these systems pay for themselves if the vehicle's returned.
Right, that's the risk. But also, I'm glad you said it, LoJack is unique in another way in that, as you said, it works closely with law enforcement inherently in the device. A lot of GPS trackers do not.
That's correct. Yep. And you know what? One quick thing before we move on, because I do want to get to those 2012 numbers or the car theft numbers, I guess, in general. I'll start with 2011, go to 2012. But LoJack, I was kind of poking around on the LoJack site and figuring out what, you know, they had available, and, you know, trying to determine whether or not this motorcycle thing was really an issue or not. And one thing I came across, and I never really got to the bottom of the motorcycle thing, but one thing I came across was they are providing LoJack systems now for mobile devices, electronic devices. And I don't know if that's anything brand new, but it was new to me. I had never heard of it.
So like an iPad?
Yeah, any kind of mobile device. You can install software that can track your iPad, your laptop, your phone, whatever you want. And supposedly, and I talked to Jonathan about this, you know, from Tech Stuff.
Yeah, it's Jonathan Strickland.
I asked Jonathan about, you know, the system and how it worked, and he was kind of confused by one thing, and I don't blame him one bit, because this is a difficult thing to kind of mull over in your head, but you install the software on the device, and then even after they do a factory reset, somehow that signal is still sent out from that device. So they're able to track it even after they do a factory reset on it. So, you know, a lot of times when your laptop's stolen, they immediately wipe it clear of all information from the previous owner so they can sell it again, right?
Yeah.
You know, take it to a pawn shop or whatever they're going to do with it, sell it to somebody on the street. Well, apparently the tracking portion of the software still operates even after a factory reset. And I was asking Jonathan about it, and he was as confused by that as I am. It almost seems like there's a physical element to this, like something is being placed in the unit, but I can't see that happening. I just don't know how that works.
Okay.
But LoJack for laptops is apparently pretty popular, because there's something like 26,000 laptops to date that have been, you know, have this system added to it. So, you know, if you're out there stealing laptops, be wary of that, because, you know, there's no way to get rid of the LoJack system in the laptop, you know, without being the owner of the laptop, I suppose.
And, yeah, hey, maybe think of a different lifestyle choice or occupation.
Yeah, exactly, exactly right. And, you know, it's kind of a cheap thing. I noticed that the contracts are like $40 a year, 3 years, $80, something like that. So, you know, if you've got a valuable computer, or, you know, a laptop or a pad, you know, a mobile pad of some kind, LoJack for, you know, mobile devices might be something you want to look into.
Yeah, especially for those of you who are running your own business, because we know that if you keep all your eggs in one basket, or if you keep your records somewhere, you know, a lot of people don't trust the cloud, Scott.
That's true.
And I don't blame you guys for not. If you keep your stuff there, you should strongly consider, if you haven't, some sort of security device to be able to retrieve that if it's stolen.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be LoJack, because I feel like we're doing a commercial, and I don't want it to feel that way. I'm just saying that this is the one that we're talking about because we were focused on it for cars, and they happen to have something for mobile devices that was really cool. So we brought it up.
Yeah.
You know, look around. There's other services that offer similar, you know, software packages and things like that, you know, tracking devices.
And so now I think before we get to answering the question of the article, which is, is a tracking monitoring device worth the cost? I think first we should explore some statistics about stolen vehicles.
Yeah, and I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this because, you know, statistics can be, you know, they can be kind of boring, I guess, especially if you're just listening to them, if you're not really looking at them and kind of comprehending them all together, able to look back and see the charts and graphs and everything that I can have in front of me here. But I'll tell you just a couple of key points here, and hopefully that'll keep you interested because the 2012 numbers, there's some really interesting stuff in that, and we're going to get to that quickly, I promise. Now, I think I mentioned that, you know, the number of cars stolen in 2011. Now, these are coming from the FBI, from something called the Uniform Crime Report. And, you know, it's tough to find current numbers on this stuff, but I was able to find 2012 numbers, and they were just recently released.
I mean, about as current as you can get. Yeah, it's the year after.
Yeah, they come out, and I think they arrived in a press release in something like late August of this year. So you can see how you have to kind of wait almost a full year to get the prior year's numbers.
Yeah, but in your defense, in terms of statistics, that's like piping hot out of the oven.
Yeah, they're pretty quick. So, all right, 2011. 715,373 motor vehicles were reported stolen in the United States. That's a huge number of cars, right? Mm-hmm. Well, and we mentioned that that amounts to something like more than $4.3 billion, and that's a car that is being stolen every 44 seconds. So that's ridiculously fast. I mean, it's amazingly quick. And, you know, one of the things that I found out when I was looking at the laptop information, the mobile device information,
yeah.
I think there's something like a laptop is stolen every 50 seconds in the United States. It's something ridiculously quick like that. So the numbers kind of match up with auto theft and mobile device theft, and that's why they got into it.
Oh, and one thing before we go on, there's a little bit of tricky language there with reported stolen. So reading between the lines, we do have to assume there's a little bit of variance. There are people who don't report a stolen vehicle for one reason or another, and there are people who accidentally report a stolen vehicle, like maybe your kid got a little hot-blooded and didn't think that dad would be home by 5 on Saturday.
Sure, and then the kid comes rolling in at 7:30
with the Porsche.
Exactly, yeah, and crisis averted, right? Well, sort of.
Well, new crisis, because that kid is grounded.
Not for the kid, yeah.
Yeah, but so anyway, there might be a little bit of variance in these numbers, but the point is that we think 715,000 is, no matter how you slice it, it's still over 700,000.
That's an awful lot of cars. And it turns out that, you know, it does matter where you live for a car theft. And that won't surprise anybody either. I mean, of course, urban areas, you know, the place where there's a heavy concentration, a large population. In fact, cities that have populations that, you know, are above 100,000, there's something like 380 metro areas in the United States that have populations above 100,000.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a lot of regions, a lot of areas that have these dense populations. And it turns out that a lot of these are from California. The top 10 areas that for auto theft, I guess, in 2012.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we've actually jumped into 2012. That was 2011 for this one. But 2012, California is 8 out of the top 10 spots. Any of these cities in California, that's Modesto, Fresno, Bakersfield, Stockton, Yakima, Washington. I'm sorry, Washington pops in there as well. Washington is 2 out of 10, by the way.
Oh, wait. So all 10 are in California or Washington?
California,
huh?
Or Washington. So they're all West Coast states. And it turns out that port and border cities are, they say they're just boom towns for auto theft because those are the cities that are easy to, you know, boost a car, like you said, throw it into a crate and ship it overseas if you want to. Or, border towns where it's easy enough just to drive across the border and the car disappears. It's gone forever, really, because, you know, there's a lot of trouble with and they're better about it, I know, because I read true crime books and I find out about, you know, how agencies didn't really work together even across county lines. And then state lines are another problem. And then national lines, you know, like between different countries, that's a huge problem for them, or it was.
Right, yeah.
It's getting better. But it turns out that, you know, border towns for auto theft are still a big deal because it's easy enough just to drive it right across the border and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
So port towns, border cities, those are big areas for theft. So places like San Francisco and San Jose and, Spokane, Washington, Redding, California, places like that. high concentrations of auto theft. And another thing that came out of these numbers, and I promise I'm going to get through this quickly because it sounds like I'm just rambling on.
No, I'm fascinated.
It turns out that auto buying habits of a certain area, a region, are reflected in the way that auto thieves take vehicles as well, and the preferences of auto thieves.
Wait, okay. Now, is this, can I make a guess?
Sure.
Is this something like the most is this something like what we found out in chop shops, which is that the most popular or best-selling car of a certain year can often end up becoming one of the most stolen?
Well, it's that, but it's more elementary than that even, Ben. It's,
okay.
It's that in Detroit, you're going to find a lot of American-made cars, right? In Chicago, you're going to find a lot of American-made cars. That's what the thieves go after in those cities. You'll find that, you know, the Hondas and Acuras and Civics, they aren't stolen as often in Detroit and Chicago as are, let's say, a Chevy Impala or a Ford pickup truck.
Huh.
So that makes sense, right? I mean, it seems like whatever's available or what's there in the region is what you go for. So let's say that like Phoenix or Houston, you know, you're going to find a lot of the Japanese model cars that are stolen. And, you know, same thing in Los Angeles. You know, they're going to be a lot more imports that are stolen versus American made cars because you're going to find that on the streets more often.
Okay. Yeah. I see what you're saying.
So, you know, I think once you really think about these things, and it's just simple logic, really, when you get to it. Now, we're on to the 2012 absolute theft numbers, and there's something in here that really struck me as just incredible.
All right, man, blow my mind.
All right, well, first I need to kind of lead into it, and that, you know, this is reversing an 8-year trend in 2012. And I told you there was this trend that's being reversed here. In 2012, there were 1.3% more vehicle thefts than there were in 2011, and that is reversing this trend that was 8 years prior, that it was always going, the number of thefts was going down in the United States.
And now they're going up.
They're going up, but just by 1.3%. And I guess the West Coast, which we talked about, you know, the Washington, California thing, that's entirely responsible for it. Everywhere else, the numbers are way down. They're just up on the West Coast of the United States. So you'll find that in 2012, there were roughly, and they've had to estimate these just a little bit even now for the 2012 numbers, 724,672 thefts. So that's actual thefts. That's not just reported stolen. That's actual thefts. 724,672. Now, would you care to take a guess at the year and how many vehicles were stolen? This is the amazing fact, by the way. At the year and how many vehicles were stolen in the top year, I guess, for U.S. auto theft?
800,000.
Nope.
How many?
It's even higher than that, Ben. It goes all the way back to 1991 when there were 1,661,738 thefts. In 1991.
Crap. You're right, because I remember we had a high reported thefts number in 91, but I didn't know the exact number.
Now, that's a long time ago, first of all. That is, 22 years ago at this point.
Ooh.
Right? And, is that right? 22 years ago. Mm-hmm. And the number is more than double the amount of cars that were stolen this year alone. So that gives you an idea of the epidemic that was going on in 1991. I just don't understand
what was
why.
Happening,
I have no idea. I don't know why 1991 was such a high rate of theft. It's kind of interesting stuff that came out of these numbers. And I did find, man, you know what? I'm going to have to look for this. You know what? We talked about vehicle theft, that kind of corresponding to the amount of cars made and, you know, the best-selling cars.
And the prevalence of those, yeah.
Yeah, this maybe will surprise you, because in 2012, the most stolen cars, now, I don't think maybe it won't surprise you, Ben, but the Honda Accord and Honda Civic are number one and two, and the Ford Pickup is number three. And of course, Ford Pickup is always the number one seller here in the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Accord and Civic do very, very well. They sell a lot of cars.
And they also get, they've been the number one and number two most stolen car for a few years.
But the surprising part about this, Ben, is that you'll find that the 1996 Honda Accord is the top stolen car in 2012. So it goes all the way back 16 years.
Huh.
So 1996 Honda Accord is the number one stolen car in 2012. In fact, the Accord and Civic models from different years, from 1990 to 2000, I believe, they make up the top 16 spots on the entire list of cars stolen in 2012.
We just gave people driving a mid-90s Honda the shivers.
I hope so. You know, maybe they'll think about picking up a track and recovery system, because for it to make up the top, you know, I think it was 16 spots on this list. And, you know, of course, they do it by you know, Accord, all of the Accord stolen total something like 60,000, and mm-hmm. all of the Civics are 47,000. And then the years make up individual units of that, you know, like maybe 8,000 1996 Accords were stolen.
Wow.
So, you know, it's really, and you find that newer Hondas are rarely stolen. So that's why the numbers kind of stop around 2000. These newer Hondas, they have immobilizer devices, which are number three mm-hmm. line of defense, according to the NICB. They say that because these anti-theft technology devices, these immobilizer devices, the not tracking so much, but, you know, the warning LEDs and things like that.
Right.
They prevent theft just enough that it makes them, not inaccessible, but, you know, thieves choose to go for another vehicle.
Yeah, they're more attractive options.
Exactly. So, you know, that's just some of that stuff. And if you go over the FBI numbers, if you go over the NICB numbers, you're going to find a lot of really interesting side notes on stuff mm-hmm. like that. You know, like why aren't current, you know, model Hondas stolen more often?
Yeah. And, this leads us to our question that I want to put to you for the close of our show today. Scott. Is a tracking and recovery device worth it? Two parts of this question. First, for your car specifically, then for a car in general.
My car specifically, I'm going to say no on my car. My car's getting to the age where, you know, it's like I'm kind of wishy-washy about do mm-hmm. I want to keep it? Do I want to let it go? Mm-hmm. I haven't ever had a car stolen, but you can't really say that because that's kind of Murphy's Law thing, right? That's going
right.
to happen.
Knock on wood.
But I just don't know if I place a value on my car enough that I want to install a $700 system and then have an additional thing to worry about, you know, whether it's operating or not. I'm fine with it the way it is. And I feel like the neighborhood that I'm in is safe enough. I keep it. I protect it. I use common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Lock the car up at night. You know, there's a warning device on it, an LED that flashes.
Sure. As someone who's tried to break into your car several times, that is true.
Yeah.
What?
So, yeah, I'm careful about it. And, you know, I think for my car specifically, no. But, you know, if you have a car that, you know, you value mm-hmm. and you – I mean, not that I don't value my car. It's just that – you know, I could take it or leave it at this point, Ben. I don't know. That's kind of cold to say it that way. But, you know, if it were stolen, I'll have him look for it. But, you know, maybe it's time to upgrade.
Yeah, maybe it's time just to drive the Newport.
Does that sound terrible?
I mean, no, it doesn't. It doesn't.
Also, you know, if you had a clunker or something, you know, but let's say that you had a car that was like my neighbor's car, that Model T that was his father's.
Oh, yeah.
The Model A that was his father's.
Okay, now we're getting – this is a little bit of a different case because now we're getting into the old debate about keeping a car original or doing some mod.
Yeah, but, you know, it's something like that you could hide. I'm sure that you could hide a LoJack system in a Model A somewhere.
Yeah, maybe just find some way to attach it that doesn't require messing with the actual car.
And see, that's a car that if you're out that particular car, it's not like you're going to go get another Model A to replace that. Sure,
right.
You can, but it was his father's car, and there's great interest in keeping that car in the family, and wants it to remain right where it is.
I mean, forget $700; that would be worth double that. That'd be worth $1,400.
Yeah, I mean, a year.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I don't know. But you know, he takes good care of it. And it's locked up and everything. Also, you know, it's mm-hmm. well kept. It's just, you know, I would hate to see something happen to that car. And I know that he would.
Hmm. And that's, you know, I'm partially on board with that too. From my response to that question, I would say for a car in general, it's a very good idea. I'm risk adverse with this sort of stuff. I would rather pay for monthly service or a hefty one-time fee just to have the peace of mind that it could happen. If I owned a car different from the one I own now, which does not have a tracking device, because Monte Carlos are not the prettiest pig at the fair.
Well, but you love your car, right?
I love it. Yeah, man. That car and I have been through a lot together, me and Monty. And not only do I not think someone would steal it, but I think that if they did steal it, they might say, oh, they might look at the inside of the car and say, oh, man, this guy's been through enough. Let me just park this.
So let's bring it back.
Yeah, we'll just bring it back with a note, maybe a sandwich.
But see, if you had asked me the same question maybe 3 years ago, you know, just knock 3 years off of the life of the car, I guess, you know, and the way it's operating now and things that are starting to go bad and, you know, wear out and things. 3 years ago, I probably would have said, of course I want
absolutely
a tracking system.
You know what? I bet you that a few years back I would have said the same thing. Now, there's a very interesting wrinkle to this, and this is a note that's good for us to end the show on, And that wrinkle is that these are increasingly becoming pre-installed. So, for instance, if you have a kid who's maybe 10 now and they're going to be driving in 6 years or something like that, then by the time they're driving, the new cars coming out that year will more than likely already have something like this pre-installed. What I'm saying is, my prediction is that in a few years, at least in the States, this is going to be kind of a moot question, because it's already going to be part of the price of a car.
Sure, it's going to be like a trickle-down technology thing where it's almost like power windows and power locks and all that other stuff
exactly.
that we talked about.
Yeah,
right?
Great comparison.
Cruise control and all that, right? It's just going to happen where, you know, of course we install that type of stuff. We have the immobilizer key and we have the tracking device.
Mm-hmm.
Every car is going to have it. It's not even an option. It's a standard feature, right?
Yes.
I think that's going to happen too.
And with that, I think it's time for us to Just close on a pretty cool note. I've got a little bit of listener mail.
All right, sounds good.
All right, Scott. Now, don't feel like it did the bait and switch on you, but this actually comes from Twitter.
Okay, that's not listener mail.
Are we cool?
We're still cool.
Okay, it's like a listener tweet. All right, so our longtime listener and friend, Tom Holland on Twitter, weighed in to say that he enjoyed our podcast on renting an exotic car.
Very good.
However, he said that we forgot to mention that there are some age requirements, increasingly restrictive age requirements, depending on the level of the car.
Oh, I had no idea.
At least, now Tom's in the UK, so he said that in the United Kingdom, for instance, you can't just be, you know, 17 and rent a Bugatti.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, because in the United States, we know that you can't rent a car when you're 16.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So we haven't checked into that, but that is an important addendum for us to acknowledge for any of the youngins in the crowd,
you know,
saving up for Veyron.
I think we mentioned that, you know, maybe we weren't sure about the ages, because we said it's kind of like you're signing a legal contract.
Yes.
And I wasn't sure that, it was 18 was the requirement, or if it's 21 was the requirement,
mm-hmm.
whatever the legal age would be. But, yeah, that's a very good point. I hadn't really looked into the age restrictions on the type of vehicle, so there's probably a sliding scale, right?
Yeah, and my answer to Tom on the net was that I'm certain that is true in the United States, at least partially. As to whether there are any specific laws restricting that,
mm-hmm.
I don't think those laws are granular to the point of restricting based on a model of a vehicle or a category. But these companies that are renting these vehicles are private companies, so they, in all likelihood, do set their own laws that way. I mean, no matter how you slice it, you don't want a new driver behind the wheel of a supercar.
No, you're going to hand your keys to this fleet of Ferraris over to a 17-year-old. That's not a very wise decision for any businessman to make, right?
Yeah, you don't want that Ferris Bueller moment.
Well, Tom, that's a great catch. So thanks for writing in or tweeting in or however mm-hmm. you want to put it, I guess. But thanks for catching that, Tom. We appreciate it.
Yeah, and if you would like to contact us on Twitter, we are on the internet as CarStuffHSW. Oh, but wait, there's more. We're also on the Facebooks as CarStuffHSW. We have our very own website, CarStuffShow.com, where you can check out other podcasts and listen to them right there on the website. You can see some videos that Scott has narrated. You can check out our blog. Or, you know, if you don't like the whole social media rigmarole, the whole song and dance, then you can send Scott and I a topic suggestion or pictures of your car, or, you know, whatever, at our email address.
Yeah, which is carstuff@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit howstuffworks.com. Let us know what you think. Send an email to podcast@howstuffworks.com.